following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone. Today I'm joined by a friend of the program. Looking forward to getting his views on everything in the postseason so far, but obviously leading up to the World Series, Yankees-Dodgers, that matchup. Ladies and gentlemen, ESPN's Buster Olney. Buster, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate
What's up, Brett? Good to talk with you.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you. Pretty iconic World Series. Historical significance of this. I think 81's the last time these two teams matched up in the postseason.
Yeah, and I know it well. I grew up a huge Dodger fan in central Vermont. And, you know, it's like I'm getting PTSD with this World Series because 77 and 78 had my guts ripped out. Stinking Reggie Jackson, you know, hitting the five home runs in 1977. And then 78, the Dodgers win games one and two. And then Reggie sticks his hip in the way of the ball in game four. And they wind up losing that World Series. And, you know, I finally get a measure of revenge as a Dodger fan in 1981. It's going to be so much fun. I will tell you that after all of that, you know, years later when I was covering the Yankees for the New York Times, I met Reggie Jackson for the first time, and we're having a conversation. I love talking with Reggie. But as we're talking for the first time, I have this little voice in my head saying, my God, I used to hate you. Because he tortured my team.
But sometimes, you know, as a player too, sometimes with the other team, you really don't like somebody for whatever reason, and you hate them. I used to hate that when I was a young player. I hated everybody, Buster, on the other team. And as time went on in the offseason, I did events with them and interacted. You know, I'd come away like, I kind of like them now.
Who's a guy like that? I'm curious. Like, who is that guy for you? An example of that player.
So many. Okay, I'll give you this. And for no reason, just something about him I didn't like. And okay. I think it was because when in the postseason one year, I got to first base and he kept blocking me from the base, like kind of legally in my path. And he was leaning, and I'd lean on him to get him out of the way. Ended up being a teammate of mine. And one of my favorite, not only teammates, but one of my favorite human beings that I've ever met on this journey, John Olerud.
Yes, I knew that's who you were going to say.
He used to drive me crazy. I said, what is this guy blocking me? And it come to find out years later, we played together in Seattle. And I said, Johnny, remember when you blocked me at first base? He goes, yeah. He goes, Booney, I'm sorry. I didn't want to do it. That was Valentine making me do it.
100%.
And I said, well, you could have just softened the moment. Like, Booney, hey. I know this is brutal. I just want to let you know this is not my idea. Nothing. Johnny was just quiet. And I'm like, who is this guy, this John Olerud? To this day, like I said, he transcends for me. There's favorite teammates lists and my good buddies list, and then there's my favorite people list. Johnny Olerud's one of my favorite people. Every time I see him, I just light up. I'm like, that's one of the best human beings walking this earth. One of my favorites and a great player. But yeah, that's just an example. And when you're young, I know for me, I hated everybody on the other team. I didn't like the way they walked, the way they talked. And it was good. I felt that it was good. I had a little bit of an edge. I never liked being friends with pitchers because I thought that gives you a little bit of edge over me when you're on the mound. I remember a good friend of mine and a golfing partner was Dave Burba. And we were teammates in Cincinnati. And then years later, I'd face Burbs when he was with Cleveland. And he'd just have that look on his face, like, because Burba's got that kind of personality anyway. But it was like we were buddies, we're golf partners, and now I got to battle you. And I didn't like that. So whenever I befriended pitchers, I tried not to hang with them too much because I thought eventually we're going to be on separate teams, and I don't like you having an edge over me just being able to smile on the mound.
You're distinctly old school, and I've covered a lot of players who were that way. The most prominent one was definitely Mariano Rivera, who, you know, found reasons not to go to the All-Star game because he didn't like the buddy-buddy stuff. He didn't want to hang out with hitters in particular. He didn't want to hang out with other pitchers. It wasn't till time went on and Mariano began to, you know, understand sort of how he was viewed within the community, especially among pitchers, that when other players would come up and say, can you show me the cutter? And he eventually warmed up to that, but he never warmed up to the idea of sharing the same clubhouse with guys that he was competing against all year. And about John Olerud, I remember I was covering the Mets when they started doing that with Olerud, where he, you know, the first baseman, they'd have him move off. As you know, he would sort of you know, dart back and forth to try to deceive the runner and make them less comfortable at the bag. And that absolutely was Bobby. And the other thing, too, most of you, and you know this far better than I do, a lot of first basemen are super social, you know. Miguel Cabrera was that way. Freddie Freeman is that way now. Anthony Rizzo is that way now. John wouldn't say a word. He was the nicest guy ever. But guys would get to first base, and you'd look down there, and there'd be nothing going back and forth. And it wasn't because he was a nice person. I agree with you. He's one of the great people that we've had in the game.
Yeah, but you're right. He was always silent. And I always kind of got to first, and I'd get the temperature of a new first baseman that I hadn't been around much. And most of them were friendly. Most of them are just going to, you know, BS about something. You're right. Johnny would just sit there. He'd just zip it. And I'm like, oh, who's this stuffy, you know, uppity first baseman? And if you know John Olerud, he's the complete opposite of that. I used to tell him, I said, why are you so silent? Why don't you break a conversation? He'll just look at me and go, Booney, I really don't know what to say or have anything to say. That's just the way he is.
And, you know the great story about him, right? With the guy at first base. Now, I think this is apocryphal. I don't think this actually happened, but it's
it did.
You know the story.
It bursted my bubble too, because I said, he came up to me, he goes, Booney, I hate to tell you this, but never happened. But it's a great story. I'm like, no, why did you tell me that? But
tell the story. Right.
You mean the Ricky Henderson?
Yes.
Yeah, the Ricky Henderson. And this was the legend. And I was disappointed that John came clean. And it was Ricky Henderson getting to first, I think. John Olerud, because he had an aneurysm in college. Washington State, because I played against him in college. Maybe one of the greatest college players of all time. He had an aneurysm, so he always had to wear the helmet on defense. And I guess Ricky, the story goes, Ricky got to first base, you know, Ricky being Ricky. And he said something to the effect of, yeah, I played with a guy with a helmet in Toronto.
Yeah.
And Johnny looks at him and goes, that's me. and I don't know. I don't tell the story very well, but I loved it. And it's a great story. I hear people still tell it today, and I stay away from it. I don't even burst their bubble. I just let them think it really happened. But I remember the day he told me it didn't happen. I said, how could that good of a story not happen? He goes, no, never did.
That's so funny. You know, it's interesting. When I was once filling in on Mike and Mike, the old radio show on ESPN, and they had Ricky on, and I sent a text to the producer. I said, you need to get all the famous Ricky stories and run them past Ricky. In other words, here's the story. Is this true? Because I knew Ricky's personality, that he would absolutely, wouldn't be any BS with him. If it was true, he would say, yeah, that's true. And one of the stories, of course, is that he got this check from the Oakland Athletics.
Right.
Over a million dollar check, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And he had it framed. And, yeah. You know, that was the story. And so they asked him on air. They ran through all these legendary Ricky stories. And he went, true, not true, true. That story, he said, was true. It's you can find that clip on YouTube. It's so much fun.
I'll tell you this too, and this didn't happen till after I retired, Buster. You were looking, you know, when the example I gave you of a Johnny Olerud.
Yeah.
Ricky, same way. As a young player, I saw this boisterous, just showboaty. Back in the day where we didn't showboat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who's, you know, great player, always respected his play, but couldn't stand him. When I retired, because Ricky still does, he's a part of that Oakland organization. Well, maybe not Oakland now, the Athletics. He's a part of their, you know, Ricky's just I don't know what his actual title is, but he goes to spring training and he works in the minor leagues. He goes to instructional ball. He goes to the big league side. He throws out a first pitch. He's kind of everything for the Athletics. But I worked for him in 14 and 15. I was a special assistant to Billy Beane for a couple years, and I got to hang out with Ricky a lot. Once again, was I more incorrect about, and I should have known, because I Trevor Hoffman's a good, you know, we've been buddies forever. And he told me, and Trevor's, you know, Trevor's not a guy that is that outgoing. And he said, Booney, he said, I'll tell you this, Ricky Henderson, one of my favorite teammates I've ever had. So I should have known right then. If Trevor's telling me he's one of his favorite teammates, it's a pretty good source. And I got to spend time with Ricky doing our job and just working with the minor league guys. It was a pleasure. I came to work every day. I'm like, all right, what's Ricky going to say today? And it was, he's another one of those guys I couldn't stand from afar. But when I got to meet him and spend some time with him, he was awesome. And to this day, I love Ricky Henderson. Yeah, but it's those stories, Buster. It's more times than not, I was disappointed about the, because you always want him to be a villain. And then you get to meet him. And I tell the stories all the time. I said, most of the guys I played with and against, they're all good guys. I said, there's a handful of guys that I don't mind if I never see again. But other than that, it's like most of the guys are good guys. And I was usually disappointed. So as my career went on, I kind of pulled the Mariano. Like if there was an off-season event where we were all going to be, I didn't want to go. I didn't want to meet that guy because I'm like, I might like him. And it was a pitcher. It was a pitcher. So I understand where Mariano was coming from on that edge when you get out on the field. Now, I'm sure Mariano, since he's retired, now he's meeting everybody. And it's great. And he's sharing his great cutter story with everybody. But, yeah, when you're on the field, as silly as it sounds, I get the angle.
Yeah, I get asked, by people say, you know, what's it like to cover a team? And I always say it's just like in your office. It's just like if there are 25 guys on the team, I probably am going to like 16 to 18 of them. I'm not going to care about, you know, five or six of them, and one or two I'm not going to like. I said, but it's a very small amount, because I always thought baseball players had a bad rap. Reporters would complain about them going into a clubhouse. I'm like, they're just like anybody else. Everybody's got their stuff going on in their life, and you get to know them. To your story about, you know, making a point of not liking opposing players, I remember David Cone and Tino Martinez, you know, telling me stories of going through a media guide and saying, well, wait, Brett Boone's hobby is this? What an idiot. And they would they would create reasons to not like the players they were competing against in that moment, you know, to find that little competitive edge.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Okay, this matchup, Dodger-Yankee, two biggest markets,
yeah,
two of the highest payrolls, two of the most significant franchises, one's new school ownership, one's old school ownership, the Steinbrenners. This is about as big as it gets. But for you, Buster, what's the bigger stage, L.A. or Yankee Stadium?
And I mentioned before, you know, I grew up a Dodger fan, but Yankee Stadium is, you know, I think, because of the home field advantage, the way the crowd is, I actually think that's part of the great, story of this World Series is how different the two ballparks are, right? In Yankee Stadium, because we're in late October, it's going to be cold. You're probably going to have players wearing undershirts, except for the pitcher. The fans I love in Yankee Stadium and in Philadelphia and Boston, between pitches, if things aren't going right, you hear this angry murmur, which to me was always connected with the Northeast. And then in Los Angeles, it's going to be bright. It's going to be sunny. The crowd is, you know, banging beach balls up in the air as the game's going along. Everyone's having a good time. It's a totally different feel with those crowds. But I think you're right. It's part of the story of what we're going to see.
Yeah, I can speak for Yankee Stadium the first time. Well, and I never played new Yankee Stadium, but going to the Bronx in the postseason, I've had my heart broken there a couple times. It's one of the coolest, scariest places when it gets cold, because it gets really dark. There's just a dark sky that, yep, over, you know, that sits over it. And you, like you said, when you're breaking out the long sleeves, I've had my neck warmer on a few times there. and my eyes, my nose is running and my eyes are watering and it's windy. I just look around. You don't have to, the old Yankee Stadium, at least for me, you could close your eyes and you knew you were somewhere special, especially when you were there in the postseason. And I, like I said, I had my heart broken there a couple times, 99 with the Braves in the World Series, my 0-1 Seattle Mariners. We got beaten the ALCS at Yankee Stadium, got eliminated at both places, at the same place both times. But as much as it was, and I use the word spooky, it's kind of spooky if you've never gone through it before. It wasn't like a July day game at Yankee Stadium. You know where you're at, and it was the postseason. Like you said, Dodger Stadium, I had great memories of Dodger Stadium, but it was Southern Cal. It's where I grew up. It was, you had a T-shirt on, and like you said, I think you set it up perfect with the beach balls, and it's just different. It's bright. It's not that spooky, dark sky, which I think adds to the intrigue, but that's why I think the Bronx, there's no place like it. And I agree with you on both iconic venues. But I think when push comes to shove, nothing replaces the Bronx in September.
No, and you were
in October.
And I distinctly remember I was covering the Yankees in 99 and 2001. And of course, when you guys were beaten by them in five games in 2001, it was right after 9/11. And the crowd there began, the last game was a blowout. And the crowd there began to serenade, and they were taunting Lou Piniella, you know, to some degree. And it was like, hey, goodbye, that sort of thing. It started like in the sixth and seventh inning. And I remember Lou after that game, because he knew New York and he had played for the Yankees. And he was very empathetic in saying, man, these people have been through so much. I get it. Like they were celebrating in those moments that that Yankee team, and you guys were a much better team than they were that year. As you know, 116 wins. That Yankee team was a bunch of old veterans. They were playing their last games together. Paul O'Neill and Tino was going to leave after the year was over. Scott Brosius in his last games, Chuck Knobloch. And you guys were the better team, clearly, but they were so energized. That's not a perfect word given the context after 9/11, but they were playing with so much emotion. And that ballpark is filled up with so much emotion. Old Yankee Stadium, I absolutely remember everything you're talking about, you know, where this the fans were a force in that series.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the ghosts come out, too. All of a sudden, a fly ball to right center goes 10 rows deep. But it's not for my team. It's always for the Yankees. And I'm just going, what's going on in here? It happened to me a couple times. When Aaron played, he goes, yeah, Jeter said the ghost will come out. And I said, I actually kind of believe that. I'm not a ghost guy. Anyway.
Chilling and Randy Johnson, by the time they fell behind. And again, this was a case in 2001. They were the lesser team. The Yankees were the lesser team, no question. But by the end of game five, after two wild home runs in games four and five, Schilling and Johnson were talking about the ghost too. Like, man, this is real.
it's bizarre. With that being said, the venues are a matchup. Aaron Boone and Dave Roberts, that's kind of a matchup. I mean, they have a lot in common. You know, both had huge postseason moments. Dave Roberts with the big steal, I think, in 04. Aaron with the home run.
Yep.
Both going into the postseason with whispers in the background, hey, you better get to the World Series this year or maybe your job's on the line. Now, they both made it. What do you see in the similarities between Aaron and Doc and the differences?
Okay, and you're 100% right. I wrote a piece for ESPN.com on the eve of the playoffs basically saying that these were the two people susceptible to a Grady Little moment, for lack of a better way to describe it. You know, 2003 playoffs, Grady Little leaves Pedro Martinez in the game. You know, despite the fact the Red Sox won 95 games that year, he gets fired after the Red Sox lose that series. And I thought going into this October that both Aaron and Dave, while they are absolutely respected by the leaderships and there's those respective teams, that there could be a situation where if those teams were knocked out early, the talk radio mob would have been coming for them. Well, guess what? They both moved past that. I think that one way or another, Aaron, who's very much liked and respected by Hal Steinbrenner, by Brian Cashman, I think he's going to get an extension this winter. Dave Roberts, he's got 1 year left on his contract. Your brother, you know, has an option year for next year. Dave Roberts has 1 year left. Now he's set himself up, you know, in the way that he's managed this Dodger pitching staff, despite all of these injuries that they've been dealing with. the similarity between the two, and you know this better than I do, they both like people. I always feel like the best managers and the best coaches are people who like people. And that sounds really simple and it might seem trite, but you know, I go back to covering Joe Torre. Joe liked people. And then I think that helped him deal with players and to understand them as they were going through ups and downs. Your brother absolutely has that. Dave absolutely has that. And I think it's a real strength for them as they go through a season and, you know, being sharing a clubhouse with all these people. You know, the worst coaches, the worst managers that I've seen in the past were coaches and managers who took it personally when players didn't play well and they got angry at them. And that's something your brother would never do, something Dave Roberts would never do.
Yeah, it's going to be a good matchup. Star-studded, both sides.
Ooh.
You know, the Sotos, the Otani. So Soto, Otani, Judge, Stanton, Freeman, Betts.
Garrett, I got a stat
Cole,
for you, okay?
Garrett Cole. We got Kershaw on the bench. Go ahead.
There might be as many as 20% of the players in the series are future Hall of Famers.
That's what, okay? I was going to ask you. How many Hall of Famers are on the field on both sides? Count them up real quick.
Okay, so I'm going to count Kershaw, okay? Because he's not like a guy added with a September trade. He's right at the core of this organization. He's definitely in. Mookie is already in. Freddie Freeman is already in. Otani isn't in yet, only because he doesn't have the 10 years of service time. Once he plays his first game in his 10th year, boom, he'll be in. Juan Soto, to me, if he just gets 10 years service time, he's already in. Aaron Judge, to me, he's well on his way to being in. He probably has a little bit more work to do, but I think he's pretty much in because of the peaks in his career, right? When he's one of the dominant players. His adjusted OPS this year, 223. That's higher than Gehrig ever had, that DiMaggio ever had, that Mickey Mantle ever had. Think about how great that is. Then you start to get in some of the, you know, Garrett Cole is in a position where I think he just needs to do a 3 or 4 more years of compilation, and he'll be in that position. Will Smith, the Dodgers catcher, is off to an incredible start in his career, especially given the position. So I think he's going to be in a position to go. And there are two or three other guys. I mean, my God, you have the two highest paid pitchers in the history of baseball on these two teams. Yamamoto, yep, with a 325, Garrett Cole with a 324. It's remarkable how much star power there is. I think the record for most Hall of Famers in any World Series, 1932, when you had the Cubs and the Yankees, I believe this number's right. My friend Todd Radom looked this up. 13 future Hall of Famers. That's kind of the range we're talking about in this World Series.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's a lot. And there's, you know, obviously a lot of them. It's tough, except for the obvious. Clayton Kershaw, he's one of, my opinion, he's one of the greatest. Not only
unanimous. Should be unanimous selection.
Right. Not only Hall of Famer, one of the greatest pitchers in the history of this game.
Yep.
You know, he's a top 10 for me all time. You put him there with the Randy Johnsons and lefty Steve Carlton as the great lefties. Obviously, help me out here. Dodger.
Kofax.
He's
see this picture right behind me? That's him.
There he is. There he is. You know, he's in that era. He's in that breath with those guys. That's how great Clayton Kershaw's been. Okay, let's get it to it. Pitching. Dodgers did a lot in this postseason so far with the bullpens. They had 4 shutouts, Buster, and people don't, you know, they weren't talking about it enough. I said, do you realize 4 shutouts? Teams don't have 4 shutouts during the season. They've had 4 shutouts in the postseason. Most of it was done with their bullpen. I know one of them was done with a great outing by Flaherty, followed up, by the way, with one of the worst outings Flaherty's ever had. But they mostly did it with their bullpen. I think nowadays, 2024, there's so much fight as opposed to my generation where not all the money went to the bullpen. You know, bullpen was more of guys that weren't good enough to start. Nowadays, there's a lot of equity put into the bullpens. I understand that. But coming in, it was the Cleveland Guardians had statistically the best bullpen in the postseason. San Diego Padres, what they did at the trade deadline to bolster that bullpen was unbelievable. Dodgers always had a solid bullpen. But in the postseason, from what I'm seeing, and I haven't looked at the numbers, but what my eye's telling me is the Dodgers have done the best job bullpen-wise in this tournament, I call it now. It's like March Madness anymore. It's not the playoffs. It's a round-robin tournament. What does it tell you these bullpens head-to-head and the starting rotations head-to-head. I think I have an idea what you're going to say, but I want to get your take.
So if the Dodgers win this World Series, it will be unprecedented in how they've been able to do that with so much support from the bullpen. The record number of innings thrown in the last decade, I think this is a record over baseball history, but the record number of innings thrown by a bullpen for a team that won a World Series is 53% by the Atlanta Braves in 2021. The Dodgers, if they win the World Series, almost certainly will surpass that number, which is remarkable considering all the injuries they had. You know, going into the postseason, Dave Roberts essentially down to three starters, you know, including Walker Buehler and Yamamoto, who are coming back from injuries. That is a tough thing. And certainly for me, you know, at the beginning of the postseason, I thought it would eventually be disqualifying, that they just wouldn't be able to sustain that. We saw Cleveland, you know, that unbelievable bullpen, best bullpen in baseball. And by game five of the ALCS, they were worn out. So for the Dodgers to win the World Series, they would have to, you know, carry this out, how much how many contributions they've gotten from their bullpen. That is tough. And I think that's the reason why I picked the Yankees to win the World Series, because I just think they're going to get more work out of their rotation, which is better. They're in a better position for that. The big X factor, of course, is will this Dodgers offense create so much margin for error for the pitching staff that it doesn't matter? They scored 46 runs in six games in the National League Championship Series. That's nuts this time of year. So most of the time when we get talked over, it's about the pitching. This might be a rare case where it's not.
You're right. I just did a show and I told him, I said, for the first time in the postseason, usually postseason where pitching is dominant, World Series, pitching's down. You're going to see the best of the best usually in those World Series games. And this postseason, I said, this could be a slugfest, especially with the quality of these rosters and how many sluggers. I look at that Dodger, and I mean, you've got Muncy, Teoscar, and Will Smith. Like, they're the scrubs on the Dodger team. Teoscar Hernandez would, in any other year, would be an NL MVP up at the top of the list, and he's not even close. Because
Tommy Edman just won the champion, the MVP.
Hernandez has been unbelievable. So this Dodger, man, they're deep, and they keep coming at you and coming at you. You go over to the Yankee side, you've got the two obvious with the Soto and the Ohtani, but Stanton's been a force. I'm interested to see if Jazz Chisholm, who I think's been a better player than they expected when they acquired him, see if he comes alive. Torres has seemed to get a kind of some adrenaline pumped into him when he got put in that leadoff spot. Is there going to be an X factor for the Yankees? Does a Verdugo come through, a Wells?
Volpe,
come
through, who's bullpen? A bat's been better.
Yeah, and I think hitting 300 for the postseason. But lining up those offenses, I give the edge to Dodgers. Buster Olin, what do you think?
I got the Yankees in six games, but I have zero confidence in that pick because the Dodgers offense is that good. And now we get word from Freddie Freeman yesterday. He's feeling good. You know, he took the 3 days off. We'll see if he can stay healthy. You know better than I do. His swing did not look right in that series. But if he's okay, and Freddie's one of those guys, it feels like Yordan Alvarez would be another where they can miss a lot of time and immediately come back and hit because he's just that good. His ability with his hands, I could see him coming back. And the words you used about the Dodger offense, about they keep coming at you, that's exactly what Padres manager Mike Schilt told me when I talked to him yesterday. Those are exact words. They just keep coming at you. And so we'll see. I mean, I do think in terms of overall depth of the pitching staff, I think the Dodgers have overall depth better. Mm-hmm. And so it's absolutely crucial for me, especially for Carlos Rodon, to get into the, you know, get into the sixth inning and reduce the number of innings responsibility on the Yankees bullpen, because I don't think it's as good or as deep as the Dodger bullpen.
Yeah, and that's the one thing in this whole postseason, Buster. I look around and I don't know that I like it. Being a purist of the game, we talked off air, and you know, I'm coming around to the new game, and I always tell people, you know, this used to be my game. It's the kids' game now that are playing, and if you just shun and, oh, mine, you know, what we did it the right way, and these with the, the game will run you over and pass you by. You kind of got to roll with the times. And I've learned to do that and appreciate some of the things. You know, I have a son playing in the minor leagues, and it's pretty cool talking to him about new techniques and thought processes. And we have conversations. I go, you know, that's really cool. And I wish I would have had that when I was playing. I think the best medicine for this is the current guys talk to the past guys and the past, but the past guys have a lot to give to the current generation. I think that's the perfect mix. But the one thing I don't like, that was long-winded for where I was going. What I don't like is I love the marquee matchups. I just love that. Oh, so-and-so against so-and-so tonight. It's going to be epic. What I'm seeing in this postseason from these number one, number two type pitchers is, oh, he pitched great. 3 1/3. What the hell's the 3 1/3 innings anymore? You know, where's that guy that's 7, 8? And when he takes the ball, his thought process is, I'm going 9. Now, you don't always do that, but the thought process is there. I feel the game changing a little bit and going too much to the bullpen. I was listening to Smoltz the other night, and he made a great point. He said, these bullpen games are great, and they can be great. Dodgers have shown, he said, but they can go the other way, too, and they can be a complete disaster. So he said, you're usually getting one or the other. You're either getting really everything goes smooth or everything doesn't go smooth. And I tend to agree with that. I think, I don't know. I just don't like that bullpen. I don't like the opener. It doesn't matter what I like, but that's how I feel about it. I like that, especially now in the World Series. I love those matchups, and I'm just not seeing them. I'm not seeing Cole Flaherty doesn't excite me. You know,
no.
That being said, I think Cole, for the Yankees to win, Cole's got to be Cole, and when he pitches, they got to win those games.
Right, and he's had times, as you know, where in big games, like that playoff game in Fenway Park, where he really struggled, and there are times when you just don't quite know, especially post injury, what exactly you're going to get out of him. I'm with you about the marquee matchups. Look, I mean, you and I are speaking, you know, less than 24 hours after the passing of Fernando Valenzuela, you know, who, when he was on the mound, like it was an event, you know, Roger Clemens on the mound, it was an event, Randy Johnson. And so many, you know, a lot of the postseason World Series lore is built on those incredible matchups, you know, Bob Gibson and Mickey Lolich. And I think the game is better when it has that, which is why I hope moving forward, they do figure out a way to restore the preeminence of starting pitching and incentivize teams to use starting pitchers more. The game is better because I think for casual fans, you know, an endless parade of relievers who they don't know isn't as compelling of baseball. You know, Madison Bumgarner in 2014, greatest postseason we've ever seen. There's no chance right now that that could ever happen. We don't know if there's a Madison Bumgarner performance out there because teams now, they're not training pitchers to do that. They're not pushing pitchers to do that. And you know, one piece of evidence we're going to see that is how this World Series plays out with the Dodgers relying on their bullpen. It's a better sport when you have the starting pitchers be the Ollie Frazier of the games.
And I look at the opening matchup, you know, the way it went with Flaherty last time out, I was thinking, I was asked yesterday, what do you think the Dodgers are going to do bullpen? I said, well, they're going to do a lot of bullpen. I said, Yamamoto is going to make his start. Walker Buehler is going to make his start. But it's not like they're thinking, okay, Walker and Yamamoto, we're planning on you going 7 or 8. They're probably planning on them going 3 or 4. They might be planning on Flaherty. If Flaherty's what Flaherty was this last outing, he might be a 2-inning guy, a 1 1/3. So it's going to be interesting how this shakes out starting on Friday. I mentioned at the top, American League best record, New York Yankees. National League best record, Dodgers. Came to fruition. They got to where they're supposed to. Are the two best teams in the World Series?
Yes. I think absolutely in this moment, the offense is manifesting when you have Soto and you have Judge and you have postseason Stanton, who's been incredible. Yeah, that makes them a better team. It did feel like that whether the Yankees played, you know, Detroit or when they played Kansas City, when they played Cleveland, it was like a heavyweight going up against the middleweight with the power potential they have. The Dodgers, absolutely. You know, my pick at the beginning of the year was the Phillies. I still am surprised at the Phillies flamed out the way they did. You know, I'm going to be really curious to see how different the makeup of that team is. I thought it was the most complete team in baseball. But in the end, with the Dodgers having a lot of heroes step up from that bullpen group. They're the best team right now. And you know, to where we started, I mean, it's the most exciting matchup when you can have Ohtani versus Judge, when you can, you know, have a traditional franchise like the Yankees and you have a traditional franchise like the Dodgers facing each other. Fox executives, ESPN radio executives, you're doing somersaults, right? Yeah. Because this is the matchup that everyone would want at the beginning of the year. What if you just asked, you know, just objectively, what matchup is going to draw the most people? This would be it. And the numbers are going to be monstrous.
Yeah. And I think they didn't, the backup plan wasn't bad either. If they had a, Subway yes. series with the Mets, I'm thinking the executives around the world, they got these final two and they're just going, yep, either way, it's great. You know, they probably had their preference, maybe East Coast, West Coast, but it's going to be great. You're out there listening to the fans, listening to what they have to say. Who's America rooting for?
Dodgers. Everybody's always so. Rooting against Ohtani and the Dodgers. I always tell people this, that year in 2001, after 9/11, you know, in all the time that I've covered baseball, that was the only time people rooted for the Yankees on a national scale. Yeah, and I'll never forget, you know, after play resumed right after 9/11, the Yankees' first game was in Chicago, and a fan held up a sign and it said, you know, America loves New York, America loves the Yankees. And I just thought, man, this is a very different time. And besides that, they're the evil empire. You know, yeah. The Dodgers might spend a lot of money and, you know, they in some ways have become what the Yankees used to be. You know, we can sit here and openly speculate, hey, would the Dodgers go pay Juan Soto? Right. Why not? You know, with all the players they have and the money they spend and they're such a powerful financial organization. But the Yankees will always be the evil empire for so many fans. There's no question about it.
Well, Buster Olney, I appreciate you coming on, taking a few minutes for us. I know you're a busy man. You're off to Los Angeles. Maybe I'll see you at some point in this series. You never know.
Yeah, I think you know up. How you know someone you get tickets from, but I am just speculating there.
I got the boys. A couple of my boys and mom's going to be at the first two games up there Friday, Saturday, and me and Dad might sneak in if things go well. So I appreciate you coming on and. You know, have a great time. This is a great series. It's a pretty cool series to cover. For those of you watching the Brett Boone podcast on YouTube, we now have our own channel. Check it out. Those of you listening to the podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your apps or wherever you download your podcast. Until next time, keep it here.